Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com. Support for this podcast comes from the Fletcher School of Global Affairs at Tufts University. To start your future as a global changemaker, you must have context across fields like international business, cybersecurity, energy policy, and more. Don't just study global affairs, shape them. Visit fletcher.tufts.edu.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. On the first business day of 2007, Capitol Hill was somber, pomp, and circumstance this morning as President Gerald Ford lay in state in the Capitol Rotunda before his National Cathedral funeral. But on the first business day of the 110th Congress, on Thursday, the hush is gone and the whirlwind, the Democrats' hope, begins. After 12 long years in the political wilderness, the Democrats are back with majorities in both houses. They have promises to keep, the country has expectations to be met, and the challenges from Iraq on down are huge. Up next on Point, we'll talk with Democrats about their plan of attack for the 110th Congress, from war and Baghdad to the economy and your community. In this hour, we'll hear from Democratic Congressman John Spratt of South Carolina and Chris Van Hollen of Maryland. Joining me first from Washington is Noam Levy, congressional correspondent for the Los Angeles Times. He writes today about the Democrats' agenda for their first 100 hours of the new Congress. Noam Levy, thank you very much for being with us today.
My pleasure.
A somber day in many respects in Washington as all the dignitaries have gathered for the funeral of former President Ford, but the action about to begin, and everybody's looking at it, on Thursday with this new Democratic majority. Let's clarify, first of all, an agenda for the first 100 hours, but that doesn't mean, 4 days and change. It's 100 hours of Congress in session.
That's correct, Tom.
So we're talking about weeks, or what does that amount
probably
to?
They're promising to get through this agenda by the 23rd of January.
And run us through what's on their 100-hour agenda, Noam.
There's a collection of about nine broad areas that they've said that they're going to address. Now, it should be clear at the outset that we're just talking about the House Democrats here.
Mm-hmm.
Nancy Pelosi has promised to bring up some rule changes to address some of the ethics problems that plagued the last Congress, including some new bans on gifts from lobbyists, some new rules to identify so-called earmarks that are put into bills by lawmakers. We have some new proposed or rather old rules coming back to try to control the budget deficits.
Pay-as-you-go requirements there. The Democrats have promised. We'll see if they can keep it. Yes?
Exactly. There's a promise to enact some of the recommendations of the 9/11 commission that have yet to be implemented, including a promise to screen cargo before it comes into America's ports, mm-hmm. the creation of a new oversight committee to look at the intelligence budget, promise to raise the minimum wage, to allow the federal government to negotiate lower prices for prescription drugs. We'll see, according to the new speaker, a stem cell bill come back to liberalize some of the rules for federal funding of stem cell research. We have a promise to reduce the interest rates by half on student loans.
Down to 3.4% if the Democrats have their way, yes.
Exactly. Rollback, to use their term, of big oil subsidies, of tax breaks for the oil industry. And then finally, a sort of blocking promise, a promise to stand in the way of any attempt to privatize Social Security.
So there's 100 hours, a few weeks on the House side here. On the House side, reminding us that the majority in the Senate is not nearly as substantial. It is, in fact, just about as thin as it could be. Does it mean the Democrats can push this all the way through to the president's desk, or is the Senate likely to become the first sort of a blocking House here as the Democrats take charge?
It's unclear, but certainly if history is any judge, the Senate is the place where legislation slows down and in many cases dies. You mentioned that it is a razor-thin majority of 51-49, and in fact, the Democrats will start with only 50, as Senator Tim Johnson from South Dakota, who underwent brain surgery a few weeks ago, remains in the hospital and may not be back to the floor of the Senate for some time. So it is very close. And even with a larger majority, Democrats might have trouble in the Senate because of the arcane rules of the upper chamber, which allow the minority party many more options for slowing, changing, and even killing legislation. So that is definitely where the test will be for the Democrats in terms of getting legislation to the president's desk.
We'll look at the big challenges, but on the nitty-gritty side, you've got Representative Steny Hoyer, Maryland Democrat. He'll be the House Majority Leader, saying we're going to have a different work schedule here, 5-day work weeks, as opposed to what had become the norm in the GOP Majority Congress of what, starting up on Tuesday, ending on Thursday. It's going to be many more hours at the grindstone for congressmen.
Well, that's the promise. The Democrats ran successfully this fall by telling voters how little the GOP did. And in fact, the last year of the GOP rule on Capitol Hill was indeed a pretty light schedule, which meant, as you said, coming in late on Tuesdays, leaving on Thursdays often, and many long breaks for members to go home. So we'll see whether or not they can hold up with their ambitious schedule.
The 109th worked 103 days, 7 fewer than Harry Truman's infamous do-nothing Congress was his charge. Noam, what about the big issues here? The Democrats have laid something out. They hope they can get quick action on a lot of these points, and a lot of Republicans may support them on some of these. But when you get to the sort of big agenda that's going to confront them as they sit with this majority, what do you see at the top of the pile?
Well, I think Iraq is definitely at the top of the pile for the Democrats. It's the issue that overwhelmingly Americans are concerned about. They are looking to Congress as much as they're looking to the White House for some way to solve this mess in Iraq. So I think that one of the really interesting tests that's going to unfold over the next few months and maybe even the next few years is the degree to which the Democrats in Congress are going to be willing to exert all of the power at their control, at their disposal, to change course in Iraq. There's been a lot of discussion in anticipation of the president's new speech on changing his policy in Iraq about whether or not there'll be more troops sent in the short term. Democrats have become increasingly outspoken in opposition to that plan and increasingly bold in calling for withdrawal of American troops in a specific timetable. But of course, power to wage war remains on the other end of Pennsylvania Avenue, so it would take some pretty bold action by Congress to directly impact the withdrawal of troops or even to stop funding the military activities in Iraq, a move that thus far Democrats have shied away from.
But there's the power of the purse if they should go so far as to use it. And there's the power of oversight. A lot of talk about subpoenas flying, about committees gearing up under Democratic chairman to look at what's happened and what is happening in Iraq and elsewhere. Is this going to be the inquisitorial Congress, Noam?
Well, I think there's going to be a lot. There's going to be a lot of inquisition. There's no doubt about that. As you mentioned, Democrats have promised a lot of oversight on Iraq. And I think when we start this month, we're going to see a lot of hearings. We're going to see a lot of officials from the administration coming up to Capitol Hill. We're going to see former generals. We're going to see former diplomats. We're going to see academics. They're going to be literally day after day of oversight hearings in both the House and the Senate on policy in Iraq. But as you mentioned, there are also probably going to be some investigations of other things as well. There have been promises to look into profiteering by the oil industry. I think we're going to see some more examination of the way that the Bush administration has prosecuted the war on terror. So, yeah, expect a lot of hearings.
Noam Levy with the LA Times. Please stand by. I want to begin to bring in some of the congressmen who will make up this majority. Of course, a lot of new Democratic congressmen and women there, many who have been there for a while but have not been in the majority for a long time. Among them, Congressman John Spratt. He joins us from York, South Carolina, represents South Carolina's 5th District. This will be his 13th term in Congress. He's the incoming chair of the House Budget Committee. Watch that spot. Congressman Spratt, thank you very much for being with us today.
Tom, my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
12 years since Democrats have had a majority. The whole country will be watching. What's the big picture you hope people see as the Democrats move into these majorities and get to work in the next weeks and months?
We'll strike that theme with the first day of our session as we move into this 100 hours, 6 agenda item legislative program. We're going to try to show the American people that this is a working Congress and that what we're working on are policies and projects that are important to them. And we'll not only be productive in terms of legislation, as you were just discussing, we'll also have much more robust oversight hearings across the board in all different areas, but particularly with respect to the war.
Do you feel on the war in a position to change the direction of the country's policy, the country's strategy there?
There will be, first off, lots of hearings to have the administration come and justify its position, lay out whatever the president proposes, and give us an opportunity to more fully examine it than you would get in a typical press conference, or that you would get in a hearing that is arranged by the president's own party. We haven't had this kind of robust oversight for the last several years. It's time we had it, particularly as we come to this juncture about where do we go with this war. I can't say what our position is going to be, but there's several handles we have on the situation.
Congressman Spratt, where do you see the clearest running room for Democrats with your substantial majority in the House, your very narrow majority in the Senate, when it comes to really getting legislation through that will pass, that might even get past the president? Where do you see your greatest opportunities, and where do you see your toughest slogs?
Well, first of all, we're going to try to move back to the basics, and the most basic thing we can do is put us back on a track to a balanced budget. Won't be easy, for sure. Can't be done overnight. But we'll try to move the budget back to a track where within 5 years, we would hope, the war, cost of the war has a big impact on this. We're back where we were in the year 2000, 2001, when we handed the budget over to Mr. Bush with a substantial surplus in it. That's what we regard as basic to everything else, and really the budget frames what we can and can't do. So that's probably the most essential piece of legislation that we'll have to pass early in this session, say in April or May of this spring.
Congressman, let me ask you about just that point, if I may. I don't know if you saw in the New York Times, Paul Krugman had a column recently saying the Democrats are suckers for trying to balance the budget. They did it in the 90s. The Republicans came in, and did a lot of spending that saw that turn around. Krugman says, forget it. We've got problems in this country. It's not the Democrats' job alone to balance the budget. Go out and do what needs to be done. Never mind that pay-as-you-go.
Well, Krugman is making an argument that we'll hear and have heard in the Democratic caucus, but during the 1990s, we established a new reputation for fiscal responsibility, I think, among Democrats in Congress. We took the budget from a deficit of $290 billion in 1992 to a surplus of $236 billion in the year 2000. That was a significant accomplishment. It happened on our watch because of our policies, and we want to reclaim our reputation for fiscal responsibility. To do that, we'll have to move the budget demonstrably towards a balance condition in 5 years. Whether we can make it in 5 years or not depends greatly on what the cost of the war turns out to be, but we certainly want to have a fiscal policy that moves us in that direction as we did in the 1990s. So one of the first things we'll do is reinstate the so-called PAYGO rule that worked so well for us in the 1990s. That's one reason we're bringing it up as part of the 100-hour first agenda.
And remind us, that means no spending unless you can describe how you'll pay for it.
No entitlement spending and no tax cuts unless they're fully offset so that they do not have an adverse impact on the bottom line, the deficit.
Are Democrats going to line up behind that? Or do you think there's, if not unanimity, enough to hold to that? Or is there a breakaway faction that says, no, let's spend, the GOP did?
You'll rarely find unanimity in the Democratic Party. But I think there's a substantial majority who recognize that these rules that we adopted in 91 and carried throughout the 1990s help move the budget to balance in and will help us again. It'll cut both ways. It'll affect things that we would like to increase as well as things we would like to stop them from doing. But nevertheless, it's a fair rule. It worked. Has no less a endorsement than Alan Greenspan, who appeared three times before our committee, and he said, you know, I thought those budget process rules you adopted in the 1990s were really a dodge. He said, I was a cynic, a skeptic, but looking back, I have to recognize that those rules, like the PAYGO rule, help you accomplish what was phenomenally accomplished in the 1990s, namely a balanced budget for the first time in 30 years.
It's been a long time since the Democrats have been in charge. A lot of water and a lot of it angry over the dam since then. You've been called a bridge builder who reaches across party lines. What about bipartisanship here? A lot of Americans hope for it, but is there really room for it here?
There certainly is room for it, and we're going to try to change the tone and practice of this Congress. Early on, once again, we will adopt some rules that deal with fair play in the House of Representatives, fair play of the kind we don't think we've received over the last 10 or 12 years. For example, we're adopting rules that don't mean a lot to people in America, but do mean a lot to the way we do business, about when a conference report can be brought to the floor, how much visibility and how much time will it be required to lay over a conference report, to what extent can you retain to amend a conference report in the middle of the night by the House leadership or the Senate leadership without the members of the conference even having a participatory role in it. Now, this is not the stuff you write home about because it gets to be technical procedure, but it goes very essentially to fair play and comity and civility in the House.
Noam Levy, just for a moment there, how about that? Can the Democrats go back to comity in the House and do it? Washington Post reporting today that the plan is to roll over the GOP in these first days, using some of the same tactics the GOP did to get this first rash of legislation up on the boards. What do you foresee, Noam?
Well, I think Congressman Spratt's absolutely correct that a lot will depend on sort of how these small rules that really I don't think many people outside of Capitol Hill pay much attention to, but they do definitely set a tone. The 100 hours, if the Democrats don't allow much debate on these issues and don't allow amendments, and that will certainly set a tone that could be troublesome. On the Senate side, there have been some indications that the Senate Majority Leader, Harry Reid from Nevada, is going to make some efforts to reach out across the aisle to Republicans, but only time will tell.
Noam, I know we have to let you go. A final question. A lot of presidential aspirants in the Congress, Senate in particular. I mean, you've got Senator Hillary Clinton, you've got Barack Obama, you've got John McCain, you've got Joe Biden, and right on down. How do you see the 08 presidential race and the fact that a lot of people on the Hill are maneuvering toward it, affecting what happens there the next 2 years?
Well, it'll be interesting to watch. Senator Biden joked the other day, he's the chairman of the Foreign Relations Committee, which will hear a number of Iraq-related pieces of legislation and hearings, that he hoped that that would mean that the presidential candidates on his committee would be better prepared. So maybe they'll do their homework. There will be probably some posturing as well that could complicate things as well, though.
Noam Levy with the Los Angeles Times. Great to have you. Thanks for joining us today.
Thank you.
We have Congressman John Spratt with us. Congressman Chris Van Hollen will join us in just a moment. A lot of listeners want to join this conversation, Congressman. Let's go first to Rudy in Hagerstown, Maryland. Hi, Rudy. You're on the air.
Hello, FI.
Hi. Welcome. What do you know, Rudy? What do you want?
Well, I just was listening to the budget chair and from South Carolina. Mm-hmm. I just happened to be in Gaffney, South Carolina, where I got this trip from. I was thinking, on this question of the budget, it's just a word, the budget. I don't equate it with the loss of 3,000 service people. I'm a former Marine, Vietnam veteran.
Mm-hmm.
And the problem is that everyone perceives in this country that we are losing whatever war we think this is. And I just feel like balancing the budget would have no effect. I'd rather have those people back.
So, but are you saying to Congressman Spratt, never mind the budget, focus entirely on the Iraq War, on winning it or getting out, Rudy?
Yes, I'm just saying, I guess what I'm saying is it sounds like political poppycock. It's a distraction. We can use a lot of words. As people talk about race. They talk about policy. They talk about insurgents. All these words have no really important meaning, because what happens, the only meaning we have is that our people are dying.
You're thinking about the men and women dying in Iraq. Let me take that to Congressman Spratt. You hear right there, Congressman, what so many read in the election in November. Americans very, very unsettled with the Iraq war, and now, of course, the death toll there of servicemen and women reaching 3,000 in the last couple of days. There's Rudy saying that has to come before everything, even before the billions and trillions that you're now in charge of. How do you respond?
I couldn't agree more. And when I said that we hope to move the budget to balance in 5 years, I was careful to say what happens in Iraq and what we have to spend on our engagement there, putting down that insurgency, is going to be critical to whether or not we can accomplish that particular goal. Let me say this. As long as we have substantial troops deployed in a difficult mission, which Iraq is, so is Afghanistan for that matter, as long as we have them deployed, we're going to support them. Democrats and Republicans, we're going to give them unstinting support, our troops in the field. And other policies will simply have to take back burner in priority to supporting our troops in the field. We would like to see a new policy there that begins to move us out of a combat mission role into an advisory role, so that we begin to build up the Iraqi army, still more professionalize that army, so they can take over the responsibility for the security of their own country. That's the way we'd like to move it, and we would hope that as we do that, some of the cost of this war, this engagement, this insurgency comes down. Right now, it's very substantial. Last year, it was $118 billion. Mm-hmm. We provided $70 billion for 2007, and everybody recognizes that'll probably meet about half the cost that's required. Ironically, this war, the cost of this insurgency, war, what you call it, has gone up from about $70 billion in 2003 to about $118 billion last year, and it could be even higher in 2007. So this is a major factor. It's not the only thing we've got to do. And when he says we should be focused on this, surely this should be a top priority. But there are other things we have to do. We can't just have one particular priority. We've got education. We've got alternative fuels. We've got scientific research at the NSF and the NIH, lots of things we'd like to do and can do consistent with supporting our troops in the field.
Congressman John Spratt will be the incoming chair of the House Budget Committee. I want to expand the circle a little, if I may, Congressman Spratt. Let me welcome in from Kensington, Maryland, Congressman Chris Van Hollen. He represents Maryland's 8th District, beginning his third term in Congress on Thursday. Will serve on the House Ways and Means Committee. He's also the new chairman of the Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee. He succeeds Rahm Emanuel there. He's responsible for holding on to this Democratic majority in the House. Congressman Van Hollen, thanks very much for being with us.
It's good to be with you and with my colleague, Congressman John Spratt.
Let me go first to this issue of Iraq, and there is a lot more to talk about it, and we will, as Congressman Spratt says. But how far are you prepared to go, and do you see the Democrats as being prepared to go to what? To counter the president's strategy? For example, if he comes out, as many expect, Congressman Van Hollen, and says we want a surge of troops into Iraq in the next months ahead, will you support that? Will the Democratic majority support that?
Well, I think the first thing you're going to see, and it's going to be immediate change in Congress, is you're going to finally have some vigorous oversight over the Bush administration's national security policies in general, but Iraq in particular. I mean, for years and years now, the Congress has been essentially a blank check. Whatever the Bush administration's asked for, they've rolled over and give it to them, and we've gotten ourselves into a mess in Iraq. So the first thing that will change is the committees will begin to do their job. And part of that will, of course, be to review whatever proposal the president comes out with in the next couple days, and to determine what the best course is. We have the Baker-Hamilton Commission report, an independent bipartisan report that will be reviewed in that context. I personally do not think that escalation is the right way to go in Iraq. I think it will put us even to a bigger mess. The biggest focus has to be on achieving some kind of political reconciliation in Iraq. Our military folks on the ground have said that you can't solve this issue militarily alone. You have to have that political reconciliation. That has been a very missing part of the puzzle here. And what I can say is you're going to have a lot more focus on this. People's feet are going to be held to the fire. And we will challenge the president when we think the president has been wrong. And I think one of the results from the last election is clearly a desire for new direction in Iraq.
Congressman John Spratt says that Democrats will give unstinting support to troops in the field. Can you imagine a time, Chris Van Hollen, when the Democrats use the purse strings to change the policy. It's been done in the past. Might a Democratic majority just cut off funding for the president's war effort?
No, there's not going to be a cutoff in funding. I mean, what Congressman Spratt has said is as long as troops are deployed in battle, the Democrats will continue to provide support. We've been leading the way in terms of making sure that they have the equipment that they need. There have been big lapses in that under this last many couple years, and we've moved forward on that issue. But I can say that the Democrats are going to be a lot more vigorous in terms of trying to make sure that we achieve what the Bush administration has said are targets to be met in Iraq. And we'll use the review process in Congress to do that. I mean, so far, essentially, the Congress has planted its head in the sand when it comes to Iraq, and it's not going to be business as usual in that sense.
Let's turn to our callers. Dave is calling from Chevy Chase, Maryland. Hi, Dave. You're on the air.
Thank you so much.
Sure.
The problem that hasn't been articulated has been something very basic, and that's not that involves stay the course, but change the strategy. And unfortunately, the strategy has been posted in all sorts of media. The issue really is stability, security, dealing with corruption, stopping the suicide bombers, disarming the armed militias. The troop surges make no sense if the people can't blend in and don't speak the language of the street.
So how does a Democratic majority on Capitol Hill factor into that, in your view, Dave? Should
it's very easy. They can't have open hearings because this is also an Internet war where people pay attention to what's published. Those silly cartoons about the Mohammed having a bomb as a turban created havoc in fundamentalist countries. And a lot of people have forgotten it took two idiots to bring Washington to its knees. Those were the snipers. And unfortunately, in the Middle East, there are a lot of idiots who don't care about bombing things and going to paradise. That's what has to be dealt with.
Dave, thanks for your call. Congressman Spratt, how vigorously can you use oversight on Capitol Hill to change the course of the war? Can it actually begin to steer here, or is it still in the president's hands?
Well, if you go back to 2003 and look at what we did before the run-up to the resolution that authorized the president to use force in Iraq, you'll find that typically we on our side would have maybe one witness on a panel of four to make our case, or at least to offer insights that were different from those that Bush administration, Wolfowitz, and Rumsfeld were pushing. I think you'll see a different mix of witnesses come before the committee, and I think you'll see a committee with a different purpose, a different focus, and I believe robust oversight is part of making the Bush administration justify whatever it proposes to undertake. We don't know yet how the president is going to lay out his next proposal, but it will get scrutiny as a result of the fact that we're in the chair that it would not have received otherwise.
Hi, what do you see, Michael?
Well, I'm kind of curious if the representatives are aware or are cognizant. They keep saying that, you know, we want to hold the Bush administration to account, and I agree with that. I think there's been a lack of oversight, but I'm wondering if the representatives in their planning and their thinking are taking into account the fact that the bureaucracy, the administration, is made up of civil service employees, whether it's DOD, State Department, et cetera.
Okay, and where are you going with that, Michael?
Well, the point is, when principals go to testify on the Hill, they actually have to be prepared by their subordinates.
So?
And I'm wondering if the representatives understand that excessive oversight may actually detract from the day-to-day mission operations of those federal agencies responsible for carrying out these policies.
So you're afraid that they could bring the government gum up the works, slow it down. Let's look at it. Congressman Spratt, you've been around a long time. Are you worried about that?
Not only have I been around a long time, but I spent 2 years working in the Pentagon as a young captain in the Army doing exactly what he's talking about, preparing backup materials for my bosses to take to the Hill. And we understand that in Congress. We understand that we need to get along with these people who do the real work, the substantive work, and we'll do that. But in addition, we won't just call secretaries and deputy secretaries and assistant secretaries. We'll also call outsiders who are experts on the region, the subject matter, Muslim religion, and other things. We'll have a richer mix of witnesses and a more vigorous contest going in committee hearings than we've had in the past, because we'll be trying to challenge these official policies. So we'll call them to account, and if they don't want to come testify, they will be in default. because we'll have another bank of witnesses who are going to make a different case, and they better be there to answer the arguments that are made against them.
Congressman Van Hollen, what about an issue that sits right next to this one, which is the expansion in executive power we've seen in the dozen years, and particularly the last 6 years with the GOP majority on the Hill and the President Bush in the White House? Do you see this Democratic Congress pushing back against that, the unitary executive, the idea of very expansive White House powers that Vice President Cheney has pushed so hard on? Will the Democrats push against that? How?
Well, I think there will be a pushback against that, because what you have seen over the last couple of years is essentially an executive branch that has run roughshod over the Congress, cut the Congress out of the picture, and unfortunately Congress has been complicit in that because the Republican leadership essentially allowed that to happen. Congress has to exercise its independent responsibilities under the Constitution, and I think you're going to hear that through this hearing process. And I agree with the caller, you have to be careful not to go on some kind of wild fishing expeditions, and no one's interested in doing that. We're interested in looking at the big picture. As you know, under the Republican leadership many years ago, they spent many days going over the Christmas card list at the Clinton White House. Mm. We're not interested in doing that, but we are interested in looking at the big issues, and you put your finger on one, which is the whole move in this administration towards claiming an executive authority that tries to cut the Congress out of the picture. And we are not going to let that happen. I think one of the big messages in the last election was people wanted a Congress that would hold the Bush administration accountable.
Congressman Spratt, you're the Yale Law School grad here. What about this front? What levers do you see to go after that more expansive view of presidential power? Can a Democratic majority be effective in trying to put it back in the bottle a bit? How?
Well, we have the power of subpoena, and we'll use it. Henry Waxman and others on oversight committees will use it when necessary. But I want to emphasize, we'd rather not use it. We'd rather have adversarial hearings which don't require a subpoena, but result in having the administration come forward and make their case. What I was trying to say a minute ago is the way we accomplish this most effectively is by letting the administration know that if they don't come up and state their position and stand their ground, we're going to have witnesses who can turn their flank on a number of different points. And so it'll be up to us to bring a new mix of witnesses to the committee, Armed Services Committee, Government Operations Committee, and the other committees that exercise an oversight role. One of the things we're doing on Armed Services, for example, is we're recreating something the Republicans undid. For years, we had an oversight committee that did nothing else but look into the operation of the Department of Defense. The Republicans dismissed that particular subcommittee. We're going to reinstate it and set up institutionally something that can diligently do the work we should have been doing all along.
Let's take a call from Lincoln, Massachusetts. Sam, you're on the air.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. Question I have for our guests is whether, and I'm a little pessimistic, but my question is anybody in the Democratic Party going to step up to the plate regarding what I think is the real issue? That war resolution everyone keeps talking about, it wasn't a resolution to go to war in Iraq. It was a resolution to give the president power to fight the war on terrorism. And I say the real issue is someone's got to get up to the plate and say this whole thing is a mistake. The whole idea of a war on terrorism. The terrible thing happened on 9/11, but what the most terrible thing that happened was the president deceived the American people, lied to the American people, foisted a war on the American people that was completely unnecessary, and someone in Congress has got to go back and say this whole idea of a war on terror is wrong, and they have to take away the power that they gave to them for this guy, because there can always be another war. The war on terror is undefined. No one knows what it is. And my question to the congressman is anyone going to go right to this issue and say to the American people, instead of following the agenda of the president, saying we need a whole new paradigm, a whole new metaphor, because this one is dead wrong?
Sam, let us pick that up. Congressman Van Hollen, Democrats don't want to be seen as soft on defense. Are they prepared to step up and try and reframe the country's understanding of its security situation?
Well, yes, I think that we have to learn the lessons from the mistakes in Iraq, and there are many. Look, this country was united after the terrible attacks of September 11, 2001. We were united in going after al-Qaeda and Osama bin Laden in Afghanistan. We were joined in that unity by our NATO partners and the United Nations. And unfortunately, we have not finished the job in Iraq. We still have not gotten Osama bin Laden and al-Qaeda, and instead we got diverted into Iraq, which, as the caller pointed out, had nothing to do with 9/11. And it is very important as we proceed that the American people understand that, because there was lots of confusion generated by statements from the White House that tried to essentially say that the war in Iraq was part of our response to 9/11, when in fact it has been something very different, and we've gotten bogged down there. So I do think that one of the lessons that we can learn from what happened in Iraq is that it's very important not to let the politics of national security cloud the facts. And I think that's exactly what happened in Iraq. I think a lot of people got stampeded in the moment by getting swept up in supporting a resolution that gave the president a blank check. I think that was a mistake. And I do think that there's going to be an effort as we go forward to learn from those mistakes and to see how intelligence was used for the purpose of persuading the Congress to take an action that turns out, I think, to have been a big mistake.
A big job in reframing. If the Democrats want to pick it up, let me take a call from Portia. Hi, Portia. You're on the air.
Hi, thanks. I wanted to say first to you, Tom, and your show that you are part of the treasure for our national conversation, and I want to thank you personally for that.
Well, you're kind. Happy New Year, Portia.
Thank you. I'm calling because I didn't want to see the hour go by without someone saying something, despite all the urgent and heartbreaking issues that are being discussed here. The one hasn't been mentioned is that of global warming and the climate crisis. And I come from a long line of family that's been democratic and socialist, reformist all for generations, and my heart's broken by the way the Democrats have, you know, aligned themselves with more corporate interests. And it would be so amazing to see if the Democratic Party could come up with a group of people. I know there have been people who've said things, but really speak with urgency about the fact that our whole globe, the commons, writ large, are under such threat, and our whole beloved planet could go. And this is not alarmist talk, and, you know, we need people to address it. Is someone heroic enough in the Democratic Party to actually speak what we need to hear?
To sort of crack open the status quo and look at that afresh. Let us pick it up, Portia, and thanks for your call, Congressman Spratt. How about
it? Al Gore has done more. He's a Democrat still and a devout Democrat, and he's done more than anybody I know in political life to raise the level of awareness among the whole country, in fact, many parts of the world, to the impending danger. And he's amassed a lot of evidence that he presents in a very effective manner. I think this is another area where our controlling committee chairs, committee agendas, is going to make a difference, because heretofore we've not been able to set up any hearings, to call any hearings to deal with the global warming problem and what the United States can do, short of and including ratification of the Kyoto Treaty. But we've got an opportunity now, and I agree with the caller. This is something that begs our attention, demands our response, and it's something we'll be free to do, and we'll be judged accordingly if we don't at least lay the groundwork for some kind of action over the next 2 years.
Well, do you really feel free to act in a bold way on that? I mean, we have what Senator Inhofe called man-made climate change a hoax, the Republican at the head of the Senate Environment and Public Works Committee. Barbara Boxer has called it global warming the greatest challenge of our generation. But when you get down to it, it starts to pinch industries, whether it's energy or the automobile industry. Congressman Spratt, will the Democrats, you know, really have what it takes not just to point to Al Gore's quite compelling movie screen, but to go to legislation?
What it first takes is to inform the American people of the impending problem and to convince them that Inhofe is completely wrong. This is no hoax. This is nothing that people have drummed up. This is a real problem, and it needs to be addressed. That's the first step, and we have an opportunity with the Democratic Congress to accomplish that.
Let me go to
Tom, if I could.
Yes, Congressman Van Hollen. Yeah.
I think right out of the box in the first 100 hours, we're going to single a change in direction on energy policy. One of the items we're going to take up is we're going to revisit those huge subsidies and tax breaks that the Bush administration, the Republican Congress, had for the oil and gas industry. We don't think that at a time when you have record high prices at the pump, it makes any sense at all for you and I and others to be subsidizing the oil and gas industry. Instead, we need to be investing in some new technologies in renewable energy, both for national security purposes and also to address the issue of climate change, which is real. So we're going to signal right out of the box our interest in changing direction. That's going to be a first step. And then, as Congressman Spratt said, we hope our committees will go to work and expand on that. But I think it's a very important signal out of the box that we have a very different approach to energy policy.
The country, the world, I guess, watching on that one. Let's go to Providence, Rhode Island, and Glenn. Hi, Glenn, you're on the air.
Hi. I'm calling because I feel like that I think one of the big mandates from the last election mm-hmm. was the fact that the American public is really tired of Congress doing nothing on large policy issues. For example, I think you'd have a consensus in the country that everybody needs health care. And yet, you know, we had 8 years with Bill Clinton, 8 years with George Bush.
And 47 million, I'm reading right here, without it.
Exactly. And we're the richest country in the world. And we're the only industrialized country in the world that doesn't have universal health care. And that, to me, as far as Congress is concerned, should be an embarrassment. There are other things. Social Security. Over 12 years now, they've been talking about the fact that it's underfunded. And yet, not one single effort has been made to readjust it. These guys don't do anything about the major problems that face the country.
Let us pick that up. Glenn, thanks for your call. Congressman Spratt, you've been around a long time. You hear that attitude, which has grown stronger, and the poll shows it. Yet at the same time, Americans increasingly looking to Congress to take the lead on many fronts. With this majority, the size of it, do you have the heft to take these things on? Do the Democrats have the courage to take them on? Do you need to have a Democrat in the White House as well to take them on from your perspective?
Well, the first step towards making Social Security assuredly solvent far into the future is to take the budget we've got and to diminish the deficits to the point where we put the budget back in surplus again. That way we won't be accumulating huge quantities of additional debt, which crowd out the requirements of Social Security in 2020 and 2030. Right now we're stacking debt on top of debt. We've added 60% to the national debt since George Bush became president. The debt service and that debt itself has to be paid, and when it's paid, it's truly obligatory. It is the one real entitlement, because the holders of our debt, if they don't get paid in full, will bring our credit down. We'll have to see our credit collapse. So the most important thing we can do to lay the basis for solvency of Social Security is to get the budget deficit out of the way. It's not the last step, but it's an important first step. If you look at the rest of our agenda, we've got some bold initiatives in education. Chris just mentioned a robust alternative fuels program. Stem cells, a huge vista of possibilities with embryonic stem cells. We're going to repeal the prohibition on federal research in stem cells. NSF and NIH, we're going to try to put both of those situation, both of those institutions back on a growing budget scale rather than a flat budget scale. There are a number of things here. Do we have the final and ultimate solution to health care? Honestly, we don't. We will try to instate children's health insurance, and we've got to do, I couldn't agree more with the caller, we've got to do something about this critical problem, the fact that 15 to 20% of all Americans don't have adequate health care.
And Congressman Chris Van Hollen, the president, said recently he sees wonderful opportunities to address some issues, including Social Security and immigration. Do you see the Democratic majority as being able to find some kind of common ground with the president, with the Republicans in Congress on those big issues, or is it going to be a battleground all the way?
Well, we hope to work with the president. Speaker-elect Nancy Pelosi has made it clear that we want to work with the White House on issues where we can find common ground. We're interested in getting things done. I think one of the messages from the last election was exactly that. People want to see the Congress move forward and do something, which is why we have this early agenda in the House. We're going to get six specific measures out right out of the box, and hopefully get those through the Senate and to the President's desk, and I hope that he will move on those. On Social Security, I hope as we can work that out. As John said, much depends on having some fiscal discipline for a change. The one thing the Democrats have insisted on is that we don't privatize Social Security. We do not think it should be a system based on a roll of the dice.
And that's still laid down already. Big issues on a day when a former president is laid to rest. Congressman Chris Van Hollen of Maryland, thank you for joining us. And Congressman John Spratt of South Carolina, thanks to both. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.
On Point is a production of WBUR Boston and NPR, National Public Radio.